Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show.
Weather today in the greater...
They're solid plastic, so don't settle for imitation.
So it's 4 minutes after the hour. I wonder if you were fidgeting with your dial there for a minute on the radio. That's a thanks to Paul Perreault. Put that together a little bit in honor of WKRP in Cincinnati, a favorite show, of his. And it's also actor Tim Reed's birthday today, born in 1944. But as I'm thinking about Christmas, and aren't we all, the central event of Christmas is that Jesus Christ was not born, but he was given to us. I was reading a passage from Tim Keller's daily teaching, and it says that the teaching of the Bible, of course, is that he had an existence before he was born, and therefore Jesus was not just born. He was given to us. He's the gift Christmas is about. You see what Paul says, he who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all. How will he not also, along with him, graciously give us all things? That is the one gift that if you have it, you have all the other gifts. That's what Paul is saying. This is the one gift that if you reject it, you lose all other gifts. That's what Paul is saying. That's the theme of the Bible. There are some other Christmas passages that talk about this, like Isaiah 9. It's one of the texts on which the Messiah is based. It says, "For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given." So it's a gift. John 3:16, of course, says, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son." Here we have Paul saying, "God did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all." Therefore, as Paul says elsewhere, Jesus Christ is the inexpressible gift. Thanks be to God for this inexpressible gift. We're going to be celebrating that this week, and God bless all of you today as you go about your day. It's 6 minutes after the hour. Karen Ellis is going to be with us in just a few minutes. I had a chance to talk to her about refugees. When they're all over displaced, what is it like for them at Christmas time? We're going to talk to her in just a minute. We'll be back with more of the Early Morning Late Show in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. We're so glad you're with us this morning. I have on our studio line Karen Ellis, and I always look forward to speaking to Karen. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning, Bill. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much, and Merry Christmas. I am always happy to say Merry Christmas, and I know you are too, but Christmas it's not always merry for people around the world, is it, especially for refugees?
This is true. They have to seek hope in a lot of different places. So, I'm part of an organization, International Christian Response, that is trying to, take people from glory to glory through the valleys. And we've got a lot of plates spinning in the air this Christmas, a lot of need around the world, mostly the need for encouragement, but practical needs as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I saw the acronym IDP in a note you sent, and my brain went frozen, and I thought, I can't remember the what it stands for. So remind our listeners what an IDP is.
Right. An IDP is an internally displaced person. So they're not, there's a difference in the status between a refugee and an internally displaced person. So a person who's internally displaced is like the folks in Iraq. They are moving from place to place within the region, as opposed to a refugee who's actually fled the region, mm-hmm, and is trying to move somewhere. So just a different category.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As we get ready for Christmas, Karen, I'm always wondering, what does it look like at your house? How do you know it's Christmas? Because it's going to vary from house to house, from family to family. And then you start dealing with refugees and IDPs, and you go, how in the world do they know it's Christmas?
Yeah, that's a great question. Actually, I'm in the process of working on my Christmas card. So nice. I've got one set aside just for you, Bill.
I can't wait.
Right here with your name on it. Do we know? You know, it's the repeated patterns of the traditions, I guess, that we have. And, you know, from family to family, it's little quirks.
Oh, yeah.
When I was growing up, you know, I came up in a house where I had brothers and sisters who were 20 years older than me.
Wow.
And so they really had established traditions that, you know, my sister and I coming along later, we just kind of rolled into. Like we had this, my dad had picked up this plastic Santa wreath off of the Montgomery Ward sale table, probably in, I'm going to guess, 1961.
Mm-hmm.
And so he would push the nose, he would hang it on the door, he'd push the nose on the Santa. And when you pushed Santa's nose, it was kind of, you know, would depress, and this tape would play. And the play would say, Merry Christmas to all and a Happy New Year. Now let us sing together. And then it would play the music. And then it would say, Merry Christmas. Ho, 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 ho. You know? And so by the time my sister and I came along, because we were 20 years later, the tape had slowed down a lot. So it sounded like, Merry Christmas to all. And, you know, so, but when you heard that, you know, kids used to love to come by the house and just push the nose. Mm-hmm. So when you started hearing sounds like that, like this bizarre Santa Claus, when you started hearing sounds like Christmas music going on in the house, my dad would play, he would start the day after Thanksgiving. Christmas music would start in the house. We would see little things start to appear around the house. My dad was so big on Christmas. It was these kinds of repeatable things that you knew this was the season that we were going to all enter into. It was all going to culminate. It was going to culminate with a big dinner. That my mom, I always wondered if my mom was as excited about Christmas as my dad was, because for her, I'm sure it seemed like a lot of work. But people constantly streaming through the house. What was Christmas like in your house? How did you know Christmas was coming around?
Well, when I was growing up, my dad would get a Christmas tree, but he would get it. He would buy a flocked one, so they had sprayed it, so it looked like it was outside with snow on it. And then we would have predominantly red bulbs that went on, and then white lights. And it used to just light up our living room in such a spectacular way. And I remember going down as a kid, and it would be like December 4th, and I'd be racing down and just to look at the tree because it was up. And I would sit and think to myself, how in the world am I going to make it 20 more days? I can't take it.
That's an eternity.
Now you're telling me I've got to go to school? I can't concentrate.
Jesus might come back.
This isn't fair.
Did you ever, when you were a kid, did you ever lay under the tree and look at the lights up inside?
Oh, you know, I never did that. No.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Got to go home and do it.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah.
It's a wild perspective.
Yeah.
You just got to stick your head up on there.
Yeah.
Very peaceful.
But it's always the sights and the sounds and the smells that
yes.
just, they can rivet you back to any year of your life around Christmas time. You can see the people around the table. You can hear the jokes. You can recall what outfits they had on. It's uncanny, the ability your mind has to remember stuff that's you, because you pair it with things at a very young age, and it, boy, does that stick with you.
Sure. So, you know, when I would get up in the morning on Christmas Day, there was I grew up in Baltimore, so there was always a crab imperial casserole on the
nice.
Table. That was a bigger deal than turkey, right?
All right.
You know, crab meat was super expensive. We only had it, you know, a few times a year. And I would get up and I would smell my mom cooking. She would be sauteing the celery and the onions that went into the casserole. And it's that to this day, when I smell that, I'm like, oh, smells like Christmas. You know, whenever I smell something like that cooking in the morning, I'm like, oh, that's the smell of Christmas. I'm sure for other folks, it's the smell of cinnamon. You know, they know that. They market those things to us. So,
you're
right. Yeah, you're right. The sounds, the smells, the sights.
Yeah.
But what do you do when all those things are gone? What do you hold on to? You know, when all those things, when you don't have those reminders, those blocks, those sort of family memorials to point you towards the fact that for a Christian in particular, this is a very special season. It's not an easy answer. You either create new traditions,
right,
or you absorb other people's traditions. You get invited to theirs. There's really only one thing that's like sitting at the feet of Jesus. There's only one thing that's necessary.
Indeed.
There's only one thing that's necessary.
Yeah.
And some of these folks at the camps are finding that afresh again this Christmas. For many of them, this is not their first go around with having a Christmas being displaced.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, the refugee crisis just continues to grow globally. There are so many hot spots now in the world and so much need. So, yeah, the question becomes, how do you focus in as an aid worker? How do you focus in on a particular region and help people through missing all those things and yet maintaining the hope that lies within them that's not of this world?
Mm-hmm. And I'd like to continue that conversation after the break. I'm speaking to Karen Ellis. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. All right, we are back. I'm talking to Karen Ellis from International Christian Response, and we are talking about Christmas traditions, and we've had all kinds of fun talking about our own traditions, but now it gets down to refugees and people who are not around their home and have lost all of the trappings of things that mean Christmas. And, of course, we know as Christians what means Christmas is the birth of Jesus, and that should always be first and foremost on our mind, always keeping the main thing the main thing. But I am curious if you are, Karen, and you know because you've traveled and you've had contact with all kinds of folk that are from places like South Sudan and Yemen and Iraq. What is it like for them? What could you imagine Christmas will look like for them with all the tradition gone?
What it looks like for them varies from region to region. I think the folks in Iraq who are heading back, they headed back to Mosul, and found that it wasn't as safe as they would have liked for it to be. So they've left Mosul and they've headed back to a lot of the surrounding Christian villages. So they were already returning to Mosul and to the hot spots since before September 25th, which was the big referendum with the Kurds, which didn't work out the way everybody thought it was going to. Regional politics have weighed very heavily against Christians and other religious minorities in the area. They are going to celebrate in the relative safety of Christian villages until they know it's safe to return to their homes. And village Christians welcome them into their homes and into their lives and their churchyards. But, of course, this also causes strain on welcoming towns and their own comforts and resources. So it's interesting, Yazidis and other ethnic minorities that are not necessarily Christian, that don't necessarily practice Christianity, are also being invited in also by the Kurds the people in Kurdistan have taken in an unusually large number of internally displaced persons. They were the ones who were on the front line of the war, and they have taken the brunt of hosting families in the region. And so a lot of these folks, the Kakai, the Shabak, the Yazidis that are left there, they're going to celebrate Christmas as well in a lot of these villages. So, you know, you think about places like South Sudan, places like Yemen. Well, we'll talk about Yemen in a little bit if we have time, and Iraq and other places where people are. There's so much uncertainty. You end up having various levels of trauma and discouragement and hope among every population during the holidays. But you can imagine this gets totally amplified in the middle of crisis. So I would say my program director on the ground in Iraq says that a lot of people feel that it's their honor to celebrate in the midst of their circumstances. This is their homeland. It's rich with biblical history. And from my perspective, where I sit, the fact that they maintain their hope in the midst of turmoil is it's miraculous.
Mm-hmm.
It's miraculous. They don't know what tomorrow will bring. They don't know what the next 6 months will bring. They don't know. You can't even say if there's a future for future Christmases in mm-hmm. Iraq at this mm-hmm. point. And living in places where, you know, for folks like in South Sudan, where everything just screams against your humanity, you know, Christmas becomes trying to make places where you remind people that they are human beings, you know, that they are made in the image of God, and they worship. And when they worship hard. So, mm-hmm. you know, it changes from region to region. You know, a lot of people who are suffering are living in, truly living in that tension of what's already been established, but has not yet been fulfilled. And that's that deep place of understanding and maintaining hope, where hope becomes such an inbreaking of what's promised into what is today.
Mm-hmm.
And it reverses, it's totally upside down from anything that we can conceive of as blessing. Would they like to be more secure? Absolutely. That doesn't negate the fact that they would like to see their circumstances change. I can tell you honestly that in Yemen, the situation in Yemen is worse than anything that we can imagine.
Yeah.
The Saudis' violence against Yemenis at this point, it's very difficult to get aid in because the bombs will not stop. A lot of folks in who are internally displaced, the best answer for them is to return them to their homeland. They want to go back. They want to go home. Many want to go home, I should say. And it's amazing that believers in these circumstances are persevering and the church is still growing. But you can't imagine how bad it is in Yemen. My friends on the ground tell me it's worse than Syria and Iraq put together.
Wow.
It's a boiling volcano that could explode at any time. There's lots of social unrest. There's lots of disease. And it's this small, tiny little country, and they have truly been stripped of everything physical that you would assume is hope, and yet they hold on. How does that even happen? Through organizations that a lot of people have left. A lot of organizations have left all of these regions. ICR and a handful of others are still there, just trying to help people go from glory to glory and travel through that valley. And sometimes the distance between glory and glory is mighty long, and the valley is mighty deep. So I'm grateful for the folks that are on the ground. You know, if people want to, you know, people want to make a difference, you know, as they consider providing for Iraqi Christians' immediate needs, email your officials who have the power to pressure the international community to rebuild there so that people can return, to stop the bombing in Yemen. Write to the U.S. ambassador to the U.N., Nikki Haley. Find the appropriate petitions online. Sign them. Email the office of the ambassador at large for international religious freedom. Even though Senator Brownback hasn't been confirmed yet, email them anyway and express your concern. It doesn't take us but 30 seconds online to keep the pressure on.
Again, you always give us something to think about. And I know the gospel is for all mankind. And so we're in our comfortable West here are going to get in our comfortable cars and probably go to a lovely church service and then have a nice exchange of gifts and food and pleasantries. But that gospel belongs to everyone, and there's people around the world that are going to be suffering, very displaced, without any of the traditions that they're used to, or without any hope. So maybe we can just end our time, if you wouldn't mind, maybe praying for these people.
Mm-hmm. Almighty God, there's so much need, and there's so much pain. And yet this is the season, God, when we reflect on the fact that you came to set the captive free. You came to relieve the burden of those who are so bound and weighted and oppressed by the sin of this world, God, sin that they didn't even do themselves. It's just the sins of others, God, the sins of greed and power that were ushered into the world by Satan in the garden, God. Lord, I thank you that you bring hope. I pray that you would shine through each aid worker. I pray that you would strengthen them, God. I know that they are tired. I pray that you would shine your light onto every family that does not have a home, does not have a place to call home. I pray that you would bring blessing and healing to their hearts, God, to their minds, to their spirits. Undo the damage that wickedness has done. Restore wholeness to them, God, wholeness of thought, wholeness of being, wholeness of body, God. And God, I pray for those who are the oppressors, Lord. I pray that you would do a mighty work and turn their hearts and their eyes to you. I pray that you would use government officials all over the world, God, who are your people strategically placed, your Daniels, who can speak truth to power and undo some of the damage that's been done, God. God, keep us mindful. Help us not to take for granted the fact that we do have places to go, God. We do have places and we live in relative safety, God, but all of us, Lord, are just passing through this life. Help us to step up to the responsibility and privilege that we have. Help us to help when we can. Help us to give when we can. Help us to speak out when we can. And we'll be very careful to give you all the glory and honor that's due your precious name as we celebrate this season of the inbreaking of the Son of Man, the Son of God. In your name we pray, Jesus. Amen.
Karen Ellis, you are a gift. Thank you so much for coming on the program.
You are a gift, Bill Arnold. Sharing. I'm about to finish addressing your
question. Oh, awesome. Cool. I can't wait to get it. And my best to Carl and everyone in your family. And thank you so much. And Merry Christmas.
And thanks so much to your team. We appreciate them very much.
So do I. So we're in agreement on that. Thanks so much, Karen.
We'll take a short, God bless.
God bless you. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. Good morning. It's 27 minutes until the top of the hour. We're going to take a little break for news, and then we're going to talk to our good friend Ron Deal from Family Life Blended. Be back in just a minute. Good morning. I'm back. It's 23 minutes until the top of the hour. Freedom is not found by trying to strictly follow a set of rules. Pastor Colin Smith points to the story of the rich young ruler.
It's so easy to simply become a moralistic kind of a person who says, I, in a wooden kind of way, I'm going to pursue a certain kind of life. And that's what the rich young ruler was doing. What he didn't realize was that actually because he loved his money so much, he wasn't even fulfilling the first commandment, which is, have no other gods before me. And that's why he left the Lord Jesus Christ. So it's very interesting to me that the Apostle Paul tells us in Romans 7:7 that the 10th commandment was the one that got him. He thought that he was doing quite well. In regards to legalistic righteousness, he says, I saw myself as being perfect. But then Romans 7 and verse 9, he says, when the 10th commandment came, the one about not coveting, that was the one that really got me. That was the killer commandment, because I realized that whatever my vaunted claims about living a moral life, there was actually a problem in my heart, and it was a problem that only Jesus Christ could cure. So this is one of the great functions of the commandment, that they bring us to Christ, who gives us the Spirit, who enables us then to pursue a life not out of mere duty, but out of delight. That's what freedom is, where your duty and your delight converge. Then there's freedom.
That was Pastor Colin Smith. If you want to hear that full interview, go to myfaithradio.com, Unlocking the Bible. We'll take a short break and then come back with Ron Deal from Blended Family Life. Be back in a minute.
Men and women are different creatures. We see things differently. We respond to crisis differently. And we often parent differently. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. After several decades of working with families, I've seen a huge diversity in the approach moms and dads use when it comes to dealing with their teens. Moms tend to talk more and want to fix everything in a single conversation. Dads tend to avoid working through conflict and don't say enough. Sound familiar? Well, even though we wrestle with different issues at home, there's no substitute for the viewpoints we bring. Use your distinctives as an asset. Celebrate the unique relationship you both enjoy with your kids. The best homes are those where moms are moms and dads are dads.
Strengthen your parenting muscles with Mark Gregston's free two-week boot camp called Tough Guys and Drama Queens at freeparentingcourse.com.
Good Good morning. It's 20 minutes until the top of the hour. Ron Deal is from Family Life Blended. And thank goodness we have Ron Deal who can come on and help us sort out some of the difficulties and nuances of blended families at Christmas time. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you. Merry Christmas to you. Now, I know divorce is certainly making American families bigger. There's lots more people that show up at events. How do we navigate through that at Christmas time?
You know, you saw that report that I saw. Isn't that fascinating? That a new study, a new demographics of American families found that families in the U.S. are at least 40% bigger when they looked specifically at families that have grown children. When you add in stepchildren, it grows the family by 66%. In other words, if you had three kids, you know, the typical family now has five kids. And so all of a sudden, Christmas gets bigger. Think about all the implications of that. There's financial differences, right? There's more gifts to buy. And if these are grown children, they may, and eventually at some point, will have children of their own. So instead of having a few grandchildren, you have a bunch of grandchildren. And so there's a lot more gifts to buy, and there's more people to have in your home. And just, you know, perhaps it adds the busyness factor and, you know, people moving between homes around the holidays, trying to figure out, you know, they have to navigate kids who have multiple houses to be at for Christmas. And so they're here, but they may not be here on Christmas Day, but they're here on Christmas Eve, and then they're transitioning to another home. So just a lot of adds to the busyness, adds to the financial demands on families. And just emotionally, there's not, I don't think, as much peace and rest. I mean, isn't that what Christmas is? On some level, that's what we want, to be reminded that the Christ child has come and that there's peace on earth and goodwill towards men. And sometimes it doesn't feel very peaceful with all of that activity and all those personalities. And so that creates a stress point, I think, sometimes for families.
Yeah, Ron, I would agree. And talk about how couples can find themselves having very tense discussions or arguments or fights, even, I'll use that word, about how much money or time that they owe to children from their previous marriage to their current one.
Yeah. You know, I do think that that can be a source of struggle. There's only so many funds to go around. When you have to spread them out among more people, you have tougher decisions to make about where that money goes. And people's loyalties are very strong, right? I mean, your loyalties to your biological kids are like kids' loyalties to their biological parents. You do take into consideration other people in your family. You know, some families buy a gift for everybody, aunts, uncles, cousins, all the nieces and nephews. But other people go, you know, no, we're going to buy for our immediate family. It's the same sort of decision-making process sometimes. I want to give a gift to my kids or to my grandkids, but now I have step-grandchildren. And so how do I do that? I can tell you that one of the biggest complaints we get here at Family Life Blended around the Christmas season are from step-parents who say, wow, my stepchildren, you know, get $100 gifts from their biological grandparents, but my kids, the step-grandkids, get $25 or $50 gifts. Mm-hmm. And that is just heartbreaking for them because it makes a statement of inclusion. You're not included. You're not as important. At least that's the meaning that seems to be coming along. And you know, that should not be, all right? We should strive for to be equitable. You got to spread that money out among more people, but try to give gifts that are, you know, about the same price, at least developmentally appropriate for kids, because that, too, makes a statement. It says, no, you are included. No, you are part of the family. And need I remind you that the Christmas story started with a man who did not have responsibility or obligation to a child, but chose to take on that obligation and responsibility. That's how the Christmas story started, is with Joseph saying, I claim Jesus as my son. I will treat him as my son. And when we do that today, when a step-grandparent does that, when a step-parent does that, when a foster parent does that, when a adoptive parent says, no, I choose love. I choose to take on responsibility. Wow. I mean, think of the message that gives. Think of the inclusive nature of love when it makes those kinds of choices. That's the way that Jesus story starts. That's what Jesus taught us to do. And when we live that out day in and day out, even now, I think we're reflecting the love of God.
Mm-hmm. Ron, I want to talk a little bit more about Joseph and what he was up against initially. And of course, God gave him confidence that all was good. But just talking about that and more, if you have a question for Ron Deal about your blended family at Christmas time, you can certainly give us a call, 1-877-933-2484. We'll take a short break and be back more with Ron Deal in just a minute. It's 12 minutes until the top of the hour. I'm speaking to Ron Deal from Family Life Blended. And blended families at Christmas time is always probably a little extra challenging. And I know, Ron, expectations are always what they are. But when you've got family celebration A, family celebration B, and then maybe you're trying to create a tradition of your own apart from the first two families, and you've got family celebration C, how do we manage these expectations and energy?
Well, you know, one of the things I think we have to do is just have compassion for others. You have to get outside of yourself. You know, just recently we have an article on familylife.com written by one of our interns. So this is a young woman who is single. She's in her mid-20s, and she's reflecting on her childhood. And what she's talking about is when her aunt and uncle got a divorce, and then eventually went on to marry other people, her extended family became part of a blended family. And she said, you know, Christmas was really difficult for those first few years because my traditions, the rituals that we used to have, the ways we used to go about doing things, all of a sudden were very different because of what you just said. So all those traditions that she expected to happen on Christmas Eve and on Christmas Day had to adjust or shift because the same people weren't there. Her cousins weren't there. So they were there for one day, but then they had to go to another house for the other day. Or then she had step cousins, I guess you would say, right? She had more people in the house. And so the environment changed, and there was just this cultural shift. And she said she really resented it for a while. First few years, she grieved what had been changed.
Mm-hmm.
And of course she did. Of course she did, because, you know, this is not what she asked for. She didn't want things to change in her extended family, but they did because of the decisions of other people. She didn't have any part in that. She lost control over all that. But what she realized eventually is that her cousins didn't choose any of this either, and it wasn't helping for her to have an attitude essentially of selfishness, to say that, wait a minute, things should always be the same because I want them that way. What she decided to do was have some compassion for the situation and for the people involved, and to be flexible with her expectations so that she could make Christmas about Christmas, not about the traditions. You know, at the end of the day, that's something all of us have to recognize. My wife and I, Christmas is different for us this year because our children are out of the house, right? This is our first Christmas where not everybody's here.
Is that because you changed the locks?
Yeah, exactly. We moved and didn't tell them where we went.
Okay, there you go. I knew it was something easy.
They're growing up. You know, it's the empty nest thing, right? So that's a natural life course, but still it's hard. When it came time to decorate the tree this year, it was just she and I. You know, what's the fun in that, right?
I mean,
we are having to grieve what is no longer and make adjustments and find a way to celebrate the season for what it is, not for what we've lost. And I think for step families, that's an attitude that everybody needs to have, not just the people in the blended family, but the people who are affected by the blended family. Don't forget the reason for the season.
Yeah. Ron, as we think about the reason for the season, which is my favorite topic, let's talk about maybe an unsung hero that was part of the Christmas story. Would Joseph be one of those unsung heroes?
Oh, my goodness. I just think so. You know, I reread this morning the stories around the birth of Christ. And I looked at it through the lens of Joseph. I mean, here is this upstanding, reputable young man who has, dedicated his life to service of the Lord and to living righteously. And he's called upon to marry a woman of difficult reputation, to lose his expectations of his house and his home and the honorability of what he was creating, the respectability of his life. He's going to lose social opportunities because, you married a woman. Hey, we can do the math. That child came before, they're going to live with this reputation. And he decided, out of respect for the Lord, to take all that on. When I think about Christmas and I think about families that have adopted children, I think about the foster families that are listening to us right now that have gone out of their way to take on responsibility and obligation, not their own. When I think about step parents who step into a situation and their circumstances, they don't get to control. They didn't have anything to do with that. They have to embrace what is good, bad, or ugly. Those are challenges there. And Joseph did just that, right? Then it wasn't over. Then he had to trust God and he had to act on it. And he had to take everything that came along with it. They had to flee their home a couple of times. First they go to Bethlehem. Then they go to Egypt to run away from Herod. Then they live in Egypt a while. Then they go back to Israel. But now they're afraid of Archelaus. So they flee to Galilee and end up in Nazareth, right? This is not part of Joseph's plan for his life. It's sacrifice after sacrifice after sacrifice. And then there's one other story we know about Joseph. But just remember this from his point of view. Luke chapter 2. Jesus is 12 years old. He's in the temple. They lose him. They travel for a day. They end up searching for 3 days. That's 4 days. They don't know where he is. When they finally find him and they go, what are you doing? He reminds Joseph, you're not my dad. I have to be in my father's house. There's such a contrast in that text. Mary says, your father and I have been searching in great distress. Lowercase f, your father and I. And then Jesus responds, but I must be in my father's house, capital F, father's house, right? Jesus would later teach us that we've got to hate father and mother and love God more than anything. And he was demonstrating that right here at the age of 12. But look at it through the Joseph's eyes. The next thing in the text says Mary and Joseph did not understand what Jesus said. What am I having to deal with here? Another reminder, you're not the dad. Now, Joseph, I don't think he resented all that. I don't think it was that sort of a situation at all. Mm-hmm. But here he is in great distress over where his son is. And he's reminded that his concerns, his fears, his desires, and his thoughts of well-being for his son are not the primary consideration here. Mm-hmm. That's, again, more sacrifice, more being forced into a situation where you have to sit back and say, this is out of my hands. Joseph did that over and over again. I know foster parents, adoptive parents, step parents live that over and over and over again. So I'm reminded this Christmas season to be grateful for those people in our society, in our churches. I think we, those of us who are not in those situations, should be grateful and thankful and pat them on the back and come alongside him and support him. Joseph is an unsung hero. I think there are many unsung heroes in our presence each and every day.
Now, Brian, we just have about 45 seconds left. And when you were betrothed, that was a time when then you made the commitment and you were like legally married, but not quite married. And then you went and prepared the house. So I think Joseph probably went out and tried to build a house with a two-camel garage and get ready to be married to Mary. And all of a sudden, he gets hit with this information that she's pregnant. So that first that first year together was pretty intense, I would say.
Well, those first moments, imagine his sense of betrayal, his sense of, he's going to divorce her. He's got to put her away. Now, he's going to do it with compassion, the Bible says. He's going to do it with dignity. But at the same time, he went through a significant hurt. And then he's reminded there's something bigger going on by the angel.
Yeah. Yeah,
and he steps in love. That's a wonderful thing to remember on this Christmas season.
I agree. Merry Christmas, Ron. Thanks for being with us. Talk to you again soon. All right.
It's a couple minutes. Merry Christmas.
Thanks, Ron. A couple minutes until the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and wrap up the show. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.